Do you know what time it is? It's supernatural story time. And if you're easily scared, and even if you're not, there's only one thing left to do. Just turn off the lights, because these are stories that you listen to only in the dark.
Stories for Dark and Stormy Nights, Volume 9, Story Number 1. 1988, my second wife and I were living in a house that I had bought from my brother and his wife. Her first husband had committed suicide by shooting himself in the master bedroom, and she could not stand to live in the house. They had been renting it out until they moved out of state, and I bought it from them. Things went pretty good for a while, then we started having problems with his ghost. Several times, my wife said that she saw a figure of a man standing in our bedroom in the middle of the night. Then we started having things moved around that we couldn't explain. We put something down in the living room and were out of the room for a few minutes. When we came back, the object would be moved to a new table or it would be on the floor. One night, we were sitting in the living room watching TV, and all of a sudden the TV in the basement came on at full volume. I went running downstairs to see if we had someone in our basement, as my wife and I were the only ones living in the house. When I got downstairs, I shut off the TV and I looked all over the basement, but could find no one. This happened several more times, and I finally unplugged the TV from the wall. I had only been back upstairs a few minutes, and the TV came back on at full volume. I went back downstairs, and I moved the TV to the middle of the room after I unplugged it again. My wife was scared to death that this ghost was going to harm us, and she wanted to sell the house and move somewhere else. I told her we would have my parents, who were ministers, come down and do an exorcism on the house and see if we could get rid of our unwanted guest. So I called my folks and explained what had been going on and that my wife wanted to move out, and I asked them if they would come down and see if they could get rid of our unwanted guest. They said they would be right down. My parents came to the house and they started praying in all the rooms and blessing each room with holy water. They moved from room to room until they had been in every room in the house, and they also did the garage. We lived in the house for 6 more years and never had any more problems with our unwanted guests. Then, all of a sudden, my wife started seeing black demons calling her to the dark side, and I ended up putting her in the hospital as she wanted to commit suicide. The doctor said she was paranoid and a manic depressive and was having delusions. He kept her in the hospital overnight on suicide watch and put her on medications. When she got home, she got better each day, and for a few months, things were fine. Then the real problem started, as she went off her medications and didn't tell me. She thought she was well and didn't need them anymore. She would fly off the handle at the drop of a hat and throw things at me. She got upset with me because I didn't get a box taken to the basement as fast as she wanted me to. As I walked out the front door and towards the gate, going into the front yard, she threw a large mug of iced tea at me, and it ticked my ear just before crashing into the iron gate and shattered all over the driveway. A few days later, she got upset with me in the kitchen, and she threw a cast iron skillet at me. I ducked, and it went through the sheetrock. I repaired the hole, and 2 days later, as I was going to the basement, she yelled at me to wait and take something to the basement for her. I had already taken the first step down. She kicked me in the backside, and I fell down the stairs, hitting the wall at the bottom real hard. I didn't have any major injuries, but I decided that this was the last straw. I told her I was moving out until she went back on her meds, and she started yelling at me in a man's voice. It was then that I figured out that she had been possessed by our unwanted guest. She refused to have an exorcism done on her, and we ended up getting a divorce. She tried killing her new boyfriend about a year later by shoving him out of the driver's door as he drove them down a road. She now lives by herself and refuses help from anyone. This was not the way I wanted our relationship to end, but she would not let me help her. She still lives in the house, and I'm sure that the unwanted guest is back, or at least is still inside of her. She won't talk to me, so I really don't know for sure. Story number 2. I was a raft guide at the time, working what's called the Daily out of Moab, Utah, a very popular run on the Colorado River. It's tourist intensive, and I was feeling burnt out and had 2 weeks off, so I decided to solo canoe the Green, one of my favorite things to do. The Green River has a long stretch between the town of Green River, Utah, and where it meets the Colorado at the confluence. This is a very mellow run and popular with canoeists because there are no rapids. It's made of two lengths called Labyrinth and Stillwater Canyons. It can take a good week to 10 days to run both, about 120 miles. And I made arrangements with a jet boat company to pick me up on day number 10 at the confluence, which is what you normally do. You can't canoe below the confluence because of the rapids in Cataract Canyon. A friend dropped me off along with my canoe, and I put in early in the morning at the Green River Geyser, a few miles out of town. Immediately, I felt the sense of peace that comes to me when I'm by myself in the big desert and in the canyons. The river was mellow, slow, and I could immediately feel all my tensions just leave. That first day, I only saw a couple of other boats, non-commercial crafts, and I spent the night on a large sandbar that I'd camped on before. It was a beautiful sunset, and I played a flute into the evening. Next day, I was just drinking coffee and lazing around camp, hanging out at the beach. I was getting ready to leave when a small raft with two people come drifting along, and they stopped, pulled up to the beach, and they kind of seemed disturbed and asked me if I'd heard like weird noises the night before. I guess they'd camped out about 2 miles above me. Told them I hadn't, and they insisted that some large animal had been up on the rim screaming at them. And it didn't sound like a mountain lion. Bottom line, it really scared them. So much so that they were now going to take out early at Mineral Bottom instead of going all the way to the confluence. Mineral Bottom is where Labyrinth Canyon ends and Stillwater begins, but they were still a good 2 or at least 3 days away from it. This animal, the one that had been screaming most of the night, they told me, it sounded big and angry. They were concerned because I was alone and offered to let me tag along with them. As a matter of fact, they begged me. But even though I knew they were genuine, I just shrugged it off and told them probably it was a mountain lion. To be honest with you, I just forgot about it, not only a little bit after they were gone. And the truth is, there's not much out in these canyons that scares me. I've been here my entire life in that country, and I know the animals, the flowers, everything like the back of my hand. I've hiked it and flown over it and just been everywhere there. And I had a wonderful day. I slept well again on the beach that night, and I watched the desert stars. I loved it out there. Comes the third day. It was about mid to late afternoon, and I noticed that the river was rising. I paid attention to that, but I really didn't worry. I guess it must be raining somewhere upstream, but this could be miles and miles away from where I was at. However, by evening, I was having a little bit of a problem locating a good place to camp, since the river was rising enough that the beaches were not a place that I could set down. It was getting late. And again, I was getting now a little bit more worried. And the river was rising enough that everything looked different. I couldn't find a place to camp, and even the ones I've been to on other trips. I kept floating and looking, and by the time it was almost dark, I decided to go over to a cottonwood grove. It was a little bit underwater and tie up to one of the trees. I let lots of rope length in case that the river kept rising so I wouldn't get in trouble and be pulled under. I ate a quick dinner, tried to create like a makeshift bed in the canoe, which was pretty hard, but the water soon put me to sleep. I was tired. I'd been on the river all day with no breaks. Now this was my third day on the river. I knew I was getting close to Mineral Bottom. The river still was running fast and high, and typically takes about 4 or 5 days to get there. Mineral Bottom has a place for takeouts and has an access road. Now, I didn't know at that time when I woke up but I could tell I was still sensing that this river is rising. I checked the rope with my flashlight. It was all well, and I guessed it might have stopped rising, but I just wasn't sure. I drifted back to sleep, a little bit uncomfortable still, and then I heard something whoosh in the river not far from my canoe. It was odd. It sounded like a large rock had fallen into the water. I thought about it, kept listening, and I just chalked it up to a beaver slapping its tail. Beavers are nocturnal, but at that point it really didn't occur to me that it couldn't have been a beaver all the way out in the river in such high water, as they like to stay closer to their dams. Well, I drifted off to sleep, but I woke up again to the same sound, only closer. This was followed by another, and then a large rock landed in the water, close enough that it sprayed me. There was no second guessing that this was a beaver. I turned on my flashlight, shone it around, but there was no one there. I pulled my watch and saw that it was 5 a.m. Then at that point, another large rock nicked the side of the canoe, causing it to tip a bit, and I even heard a little bit of the wood splintering. Whoever had thrown it had seen my light and knew where I was located. I was mad, but I was also scared, and I started yelling and cussing that whoever it was to cut it out. Nothing else happened, except another rock was thrown, again close to the canoe. And they were large rocks. I could tell by the way they splashed. I figured I had two choices. Either stay where I was and get hurt, killed, or sunk, or I needed to get away. I untied the ropes, afraid to use a flashlight again to see what I was doing, and I got the canoe free. And in the meantime, more rocks kept flying at me. I pulled out into the current, and it was still dark, and then right away I heard a sound from the rim high above, and it's a sound I'll never forget, and I've never heard it since. It started out as very loud, a deep growl, and it turned into a high-pitched scream that echoed throughout the canyon. I've never heard anything so massive, and I knew it had to come from a very large creature. It had almost an electrical component to it, and it made my blood run cold and scared me to death. The wind was probably a good 1,000 feet above me, so I felt safe on the river, and I started trying to read the currents in the early dawn, which was very difficult. The river had risen enough that I wasn't afraid of hitting a sandbar as being run over by a large log, but I managed to stay afloat as the dawn light gradually broke and I was able to see what was around me. The river had gone down and I stayed out in the middle. I was afraid of getting close to the rim where all that weird stuff had happened. Now, as more light became visible, I made out someone running on the rim, keeping up with me, though it was some distance away, and whoever it was running fast. That scared me, that someone could do this, but at the same time, I knew they had no chance of jumping off that rim. It was just too high and too sheer. They were so high up, I could barely make out the figure on the skyline. It's hard to say what I was feeling, and by late morning, this had been going on for several hours. That figure kept following me along the rim. It occurred to me that there were places where one could come down off the rim, and this made me anxious. It was a fight or flight kind of fear, and adrenaline was coursing through my body to the point that I was almost nearly physically sick. I hadn't eaten anything since the day before, and I knew I couldn't keep anything down. And also, I was in a state of disbelief. This place had always been my sanctuary. I thought of other rafters who had stopped and of their report. Whatever this thing was, it had a lot of endurance and speed to keep up with me, and I estimated it must have been going at least 6 or 7 miles per hour on the river. By now I was rowing as fast as I could, and all I thought of was getting to Mineral Bottom. I knew I was almost to Bow Knot Bend, and it would be about a mile from the takeout once I left the loop. I entered the meander, looked up, but there was nothing on the rim. I guess they gave up, but I soon found out I was wrong. I noticed a large, man-like creature, brown, swimming in the current behind me and to my right, and incredibly, it was gaining on me. It was huge and very powerful to make headway against the river currents, which were really swift from the storm from the day before. For a moment, I almost thought I was hallucinating. I rowed harder, fear making me row harder and harder. What I could see was covered with dark hair, except around the face, where it appeared to have lighter skin. I really couldn't see it that well because of the water being flung up by the strokes, but it reminded me of an ape and a human. Again, I had that feeling of surreal. Soon I got to Mineral Bottom, and what a sense of relief I felt. The creature was still there, but when I made it to the banks of the river, praying that someone was there, it seemed to fall back. If no one was there, I really had no idea what would happen to me. My prayers were answered, and I saw a raft group putting into still water. I could barely talk, and I asked if I could get a ride out with a driver. I was sick, and they said it would be fine. I felt myself shaking, and I almost thought I was going to pass out, but managed to keep it together. I wanted to tell them not to get in the water, but I decided with that many people they would be okay. And to tell the truth, I thought they would think I was crazy, so I didn't say anything. We loaded my canoe, and I didn't even care what happened to it, because the truth is, I knew I would never use it again. I ended up giving it to a friend. I wanted nothing more to do with it. When I gave it to my friend, he didn't believe me when I told him the story. And I told him, hey, I'm never going to use it again. And he seemed to accept it. I haven't been on the river since. I left my job and moved to Colorado, where I work as a contractor. And I feel like I've lost a very important part of my life. And I've even gone and gotten some therapy. And they all tell me the same thing, that I suffer from symptoms of PTSD. Not long after this incident, my friend who I'd given the canoe to, against my advice, went down the labyrinth in it. I'd begged him not to do it. At that moment, I regretted giving him the canoe. He woke up one morning to find that the canoe was missing, even though he'd tied it carefully. He had to hitch a ride with some other rafters, and they found the canoe a few miles downstream on a beach, and it was smashed. Now, this was a very valuable craft. It was handmade, came from Maine, and no one would have destroyed it just for the sake of destroying it. My friend said he found several huge footprints next to the boat in the sand, and they looked like human footprints. I know exactly what did that damage, and I also know what it could do with its bare hands. Why it didn't hurt my friend, I don't know. Maybe it was just angry at people overall. I never saw that creature again, though I heard it scream many times in my nightmares. Next story. When I was in college, I went to a university in the Philippines called Ateneo de Manila University. The university was run by Jesuit priests and was fairly new when compared to Ivy League schools in the USA. The land where the university sat was apparently either a prison camp or war hospital during the Japanese occupation of the Philippines back in World War II. Now that fact may or may not have anything to do with my story. I only know what me and my roommates experienced. It was summer and I was dorming in Cervini Hall with three other girls, Michelle, Kat, and a girl who didn't really attend the university, but was just there for summer classes, and therefore I can't remember her name. For the sake of the story, I will call her Summer Girl. Michelle, Kat, and I knew each other pretty well after having lived in the same dorm for the past few terms. We usually lived in Eliaso Hall, the girls' dorm, but during the summers, we had to make do with living in the third floor of the boys' dorm. This is how we ended up in room 314. From the beginning, there were some strange occurrences in room 314. It wasn't really any big deal in the beginning. It was just things like doors locking themselves, hair standing on end in the middle of the night over nothing, stuff like that. But there were two occurrences that really marked our summer experiences that year. The first one involved Michelle. Her bed was by the door, and the wall of the door had wooden window jalousies. The jalousies at the bottom half would not close. One night, while Michelle was studying French, she suddenly bolted out of her study desk and ran outside. Kat and I looked at each other in surprise when she did this. Upon her return, we asked her what made her bolt like that. According to Michelle, the reason was that while staring off into space while studying, she had seen someone through the open jalousies, walking very slowly in a long white nightgown. The pace of the person's walk, as well as what she was wearing, made her curious, and that's why she ran out. Kat and I asked her then what she found outside. Michelle replied that there was no one outside, but she was sure she had seen that person in a white nightgown walking slowly. She even went next door, she said, because at the rate the person was walking, she would have just been next door. But when she opened the door to the next room, no one was there wearing a white nightgown. We never did find out what that thing was, but I remember Kat, Michelle, and I prayed that night for the unrestful souls. The second incident in room 314 was even scarier. This time it involved me and Michelle. One night I was experimenting with my new curling iron. I had a mirror positioned on my desk, and I was curling my hair. From behind me through the mirror I could see summer girl sitting on her chair in front of her desk, studying or reading, at least. Kat was on her bed next to summer girl's bed. Michelle was again across me sitting by her desk studying. As I curled my hair, I could see summer girl from her back in my mirror. A few moments on, I thought I heard her crying, as well as reading a letter or something like that. The thought came to me that should I approach her and comfort her? But then I thought I shouldn't be so nosy after all. I didn't know her that well. So that decided, I continued curling my hair and eventually got tired of doing so and started to straighten my hair again. Then I heard her still crying. As I turned around to talk to Michelle, I suddenly glimpsed summer girl sleeping on the bed next to Kat's. In the split second that I'd seen her through my mirror crying and reading, there was no way that she could have gotten to the bed from the chair that fast. I suddenly realized that the person I had been seeing in the mirror was not summer girl. I glanced at Michelle, and she told me I saw her too. I jumped up from my bed, and Michelle and I ended up sleeping in the same bed that night. When Kat saw us lying in the same bed the next day, she asked what happened, and we told her. She said that summer girl had gone to sleep at the same time as her, and I was curling my hair and seeing that girl in the mirror for a good 20 minutes. And all that time, it wasn't her. From that time on, we resolved to pray for the restless souls in our midst before going to bed at night. I think we helped them because we had an uneventful rest of the summer in room 314. Next story. My name is Donnie, and I own a ski shop in a small town in Colorado. I like being outdoors, and I especially like mountain climbing. Well, I used to. That was before I hurt my knees climbing and skiing, and also had a paradigm shift. Let me explain what I mean by that. One day I set out to climb Red Cloud Peak, which is about 14,000 feet. This is in the San Juan Mountains. It was late summer, and this was what's called the monsoon season. The San Juans are full of iron ore, which attract a lot of lightning strikes, more than a lot of other mountains in Colorado. And with the monsoons, it was the perfect lightning conditions. I got an early start heading out from the tiny town, and I was told that the Red Cloud Trailhead was on the road to Cinnamon Pass, and I'd never been on it. Now, I grew up in Colorado, so to me a mountain pass is simply just a road that goes over a mountain. I left Lake City, took the first road that looked like it went over a mountain. And at that moment, I didn't realize I'd taken the wrong fork in the road. Now, I'm not the bravest high-altitude driver, and when I think back about what I did, it amazes me that I did do it. And I just took off and saw one single track going up a very steep mountain. I just didn't see where it actually went. I climbed a few hundred feet, and soon I was at a scree field. The road now is just flat and faint, and it looked like a 45-degree slope of loose rock. I could see that it ended high above an old abandoned mine. The rocks were beginning to settle under my Jeep, and there was no place to turn around. So I very slowly backed down the road. It was very steep and narrow, and I was hoping I could stay on the track. That should have been my first sign that I should have gone home and read a book or do anything else except to be where I was at. But when I got back down, I checked the map, and I realized that I'd taken the wrong turn. Once back off that field, I studied the map again and found the right road and continued on to the base of the peak. Red Cloud is not a particularly difficult peak, but for any of the peaks in Colorado, you do need stamina and you have to be in good shape. And you can die on any of them if anything goes wrong. The Silver Creek route up Red Cloud follows the creek for a few miles and veers off onto the flanks of the big peak into the tundra and eventually on up the summit. It's a pleasant hike up the creek, and the climbing actually starts to get intense after leaving the drainage. It's a 9-mile round trip with the elevation at about 3,700 feet. Because I'd started off on that wrong turn, I'd lost some time. It was getting late. It was only an hour before noon, which is when one should be actually at the top of the peak, not starting out, because those monsoons can carry you off the top. Now, the sky was clear at this point, but I knew that clouds can quickly form in these mountains. However, I decided to start out anyway. I could turn around if things got bad, no problem. At least, that's what I told myself. Now, I had a day pack with water, a jacket, and a gorp. And I hiked to the base of the peak, the altitude, making me somewhat lightheaded. I went through some fields of boulders until I saw the ridge high above that led to the final summit. At this point, because the air was so thin, I had to stop often to catch my breath. Clouds were forming, but it didn't look too serious, so on I went. I finally reached a small saddle. By now the winds are starting to whip around me, and the clouds are moving in, temperatures dropping as well. I kept climbing upward, and it's getting darker and darker, but it's only early afternoon. I stopped to catch my breath again. And it's at this point that it began to snow, and I heard a rock slide above me, but I couldn't see anything. Things became quiet. I stopped to eat, drink water, and I could feel my strength. And I had to decide really whether I wanted to continue or not. I put on my jacket, but it was still getting chilly. There was a part of me that said, turn around, but the other part of me said to keep on going. There was a lot of effort to take me so near the top, and I wanted to make it there. I kept going. The clouds became darker, and I started to get this sense of urgency and dread. And you know what? Later, my brother told me that he'd climbed that same peak and rescued a climber who had gone hypothermic, who had no idea who he was, where he was, and who was thinking of going back up instead of down. It wasn't long till I was at the top, but there was no payoff. There was no view, all except a lot of swirling snow and black clouds. I felt really alone. I wanted to stop and sit like I always did when I was there, but at the same time, I had this feeling, which was getting stronger and stronger by the minute, which said, get out of here, retreat. And at that point, the wind began to howl. It was a long hike back, and again, the altitude required a lot of effort. The retreat down was a test of my willpower, and I started to shiver. Hypothermia set in, which is one of the biggest killers in the mountains, and I hadn't come prepared with the right type of clothing to keep me warm, especially since I was alone. I continued to eat some food for my downward trip just to keep my energy up, but I was failing, and I was feeling fatigue more than I should, and I knew it was because my core body temperature was dropping. My legs felt very heavy, and more than anything, I wanted to stop and rest and take a nap. However, I knew I had to continue. Right now, the only thing that was keeping me going was my determination. I heard a lot of stories, and I knew how easy it was to die like this. Snow kept coming down around me. It was nearly dark, not because it was sunset, but how thick the clouds had become. I began to lose my sense of who I was, where I was, and why I'd been there. For a bit, I even thought I was being followed by a cougar, but all I could see was swirling snow. I stumbled on, and I thought of my brother, and I thought he was with me, and I kept talking to him. But somehow, deep inside, I knew this wasn't right, and I had to keep going. Now, I started getting dizzy, stopped for a bit, leaned against a tall pine. Again, I wanted nothing more than to sit down and take a nap. I was very sleepy from the hypothermia and the altitude. Finally, I sat down and again, take that quick nap, but then I'd get up and continue on. One of the last things I remembered was how quiet the snow made everything and how the color of my jacket was switching from blue to white. I woke up and I felt very strange. I didn't know how long I'd been sleepy, and I had no idea where I was. At that point, I wasn't even sure who I was. My toes and my fingertips were numb, and the edges of my ears had a burning sensation. I also remember a musky odor. I thought I was sitting in a rocking chair, and I tried to stand up, but couldn't. It was then I realized I was being carried. I finally regained some sense. I remembered who I was and what I was doing there. Someone had found me and was carrying me. It felt like I was thrown over someone's shoulder, and this seemed really odd to me. But then I thought, well, how else would you be able to carry someone? I tried asking, "Who are you?" but got no answer. Continued on down the trail. I felt very warm where I was in contact with this person, and I thought they probably had a high metabolism to have so much body heat. As a matter of fact, it helped me warm up a lot. It almost felt like they were burning hot. As I became more aware of these, of my senses, I realized that whoever was carrying me was very large, and the ground wasn't very close to me. That's when I started to pay attention and looked down the backside of whoever it was, and I realized they were very big. I could see huge muscles in their legs as they walk, and they didn't seem to have any trouble carrying me, and I weigh a good 200 pounds. It began to dawn on me very slowly, maybe because of what I was seeing, that this person had no clothes, had dark brown hair, and was barefoot. I could make out their tracks behind us, and they were large, at least twice what mine would have been. They pushed deep into the snow, which was about a good 6 inches in depth. I began to question my sanity. I thought, I must be dreaming. How could this be happening? I mean, I'd heard of Bigfoot, but it was a myth, a legend. And in other parts of the country, not in Colorado, strangely enough, this allowed me to relax. It was just a dream. Maybe I was dying. The brain does strange things when it's freezing. But all of a sudden, my survival instinct kicked in. I didn't want to die. I had people I cared about, things I wanted to do. I couldn't just let myself die out there. I had to pull myself out of this hallucination and get back to reality. I wanted to get back to my Jeep, and I wanted to get warm. I started yelling and kicking, and I tried to twist myself loose. Next thing I remember, I was placed onto the ground. I lay there for a moment, almost afraid to look up. What if it wasn't a dream? When I opened my eyes, I saw I was on the ground next to my Jeep. I pulled myself up and looked around. There was nothing there. Just me and my Jeep. I fumbled with my keys and opened the door. I'll never forget how difficult those last few steps were. It was all I could do to unlock the door and get in, turn on the heater, soak in the heat. It felt as hard as climbing the entire mountain had been. I finally relaxed, savored the warmth, and I still had the desire to sleep. But the snow was coming down, and I now began to worry about getting stuck. Again, I realized I had to get out of there. But what I'd experienced, was it a dream? A hallucination? I wanted to make sense of it, so I opened the car door and looked out. But there was just swirling snow. I was too weak to go and look for footprints. At that point, I was half terrified of finding them. I grabbed a sack from the passenger side and contained my dinner, bread, lunch meat, apples, and some cheese. I took the sack and put it outside next to the car. If that creature was real, I owed it my life. And I yelled, "Thank you." I knew at this point I must be crazy, throwing away my only food and yelling into the storm. What if I got stuck and I needed to eat something? However, I chanced it. I drove away half numb, and I made it down to Lake City. Once I got down there, the sun was out, the sky was blue, and behind me, the mountain was still hidden in black clouds. I later heard that the San Juans got over 2 feet of snow that day, and through the night, a storm raged, and I had a fierce headache for 2 long days. My ears, toes, and fingertips suffered like frostbite. But what suffered most of all was my idea of what I thought was the natural world. To be honest, I never recovered, because I know that creature, whatever it was, saved my life. If it was a real thing and not a hallucination, but I'm afraid to go out into the woods alone, although I'm okay with others around. I went to my cousin's house in Lake City, and then to the doctor, where I was treated and released. She believed my story, though I didn't tell her for several days. The next summer, we decided to go back up there to get some, what do you call it, closure. When I got out of the car, the sun was out, but I still flashed back to that snowy day. I almost felt like I was back in a storm, and I felt panic starting to rise. She put her arms around me, held me a while, and cried, and I cried, and I'm a grown man. Was it a dream? I'll never know for sure. But part of me believes it wasn't, just because of the smell that stayed on my clothes and almost more convincingly a small bit of dark hair that got caught in the zipper of my pack when that animal was carrying me. I place it in a small bag, and it's kind of a treasure that helps to remember that there are other intelligent animals on this planet. And I'm so glad it crossed paths with me.